welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus City Schools could be under state control in under 2 years. That's due to a 2015 law that applies to any Ohio district that receives three consecutive failing grades on the state report card. Dayton schools could be taken over as soon as this summer, with Columbus and other districts facing potential takeovers after the next school year. Dayton Daily News investigative reporter Josh Swigert has been covering the issue. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. Glad to be here.
Josh, how does the law work?
So you basically described it. It's pretty simple. If a district gets a failing grade for three consecutive years, then the state comes in. An academic distress commission is appointed with three members appointed by the state, one appointed by the school board, and one by the mayor. That academic distress commission, within like 60 days, has to hire a superintendent who essentially takes over the school district. The school board is relegated to observing what happens instead of having any control, and that superintendent has broad powers to open schools, close schools, hire and fire staff, and the state, through that academic distress commission, essentially takes over the district.
What are the evidence that having such a state-run operation is more effective than local control?
So that's a loaded question, right? So it depends on who you ask. Mm-hmm. There are supporters and proponents of the law. So far in Ohio, it has not had a great track record. There are three districts that have been taken over. Youngstown was the first. In fact, this whole thing was created, it was originally called the Youngstown Plan to address issues there, and has not seen a big improvement. In fact, some of its scores have slipped. The superintendent there would say that they've gained in some areas, but data shows they've lost in others, and they're still a failing district after several years of state takeover. Lorain was taken over, is still a failing district. East Cleveland was taken over last year, and the report card hasn't come out on that. But the ones that have been taken over in Ohio so far have not seen marked progress. In other states, there have been takeovers that have worked better, but in Ohio, there's not been any huge improvement in the districts that have been taken over by the state.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the state law that was passed in 2015 that enables the state, empowers the state to take over school districts that fail three consecutive times on the state report card. My guest right now, Josh Swigert. He's a Dayton Daily News investigative reporter. He's been covering this issue. So is it self-perpetuating as long as the district stays, fails the state report card, does it stay in state control then? I mean, or is there a point where it triggers it back to local control?
There is, and it's kind of interesting. So in order to, if Dayton's taken over by the state, in order to come out of state takeover, it would have to improve its scores from an F to a C and then not get an F for the next 2 years. Now, it's worth noting that none of Ohio's large urban districts got a C. So they would have to go from being the lowest, right now Dayton's the lowest performing school district in the state. It would have to go from being the lowest performing school district in the state to the best performing urban school district in the state, mm-hmm. Which is a pretty high mark to reach, and then not drop back down for 2 years in order to be taken over. So there's a way to get out of it, but it's a very high benchmark that some question whether it's even reasonable.
And so is that then in perpetuity, the state controls the district?
Indeed. Yeah. Wow. There are certain mechanisms that trigger over the years. So the superintendent, after a couple of years, gains the ability to start making changes to the union contracts. After, I think, 5 years, the elected school board gets wiped out and the city mayor appoints a new school board. That new school board still has no actual power. Interestingly, actually, the one power they do have is they can still put on a levy, which creates this interesting situation in Youngstown, right, where the school board is needed to put on the levy, but they have no control of how the money is spent. And so they're saying, we're not going to put on a levy because we can't control the superintendent. And the superintendent's saying, well, I might need a levy. And so that creates some real friction there. So there's a lot of, like, idiosyncrasies to this that cause a lot of problems.
You mentioned that Ohio, it's these kinds of laws work better in other states. Are there any significant differences that explain that?
We did speak to a researcher at the University of Virginia who's found that there are 25 states that have some sort of takeover mechanism. Many of them have not actually implemented the takeover. It's hard to say. I mean, it's a mixed bag. The researcher said, yes, there are instances where if teacher training and certain things are followed through with fidelity, there have been improvement. But as she says, it's hard to say that whether that's because of the takeover or whether that thing would have occurred anyways if there hadn't been a takeover and they would have just done these steps. So the researchers have even said, you know, it's not clear whether this takeover is a demonstrable way to improve struggling schools.
We know in Columbus how long it can take to hire a new superintendent. What are they thinking with 60 days? I mean, what have they come up with as far as hiring new superintendents within a couple months?
Oh, it's quick. Yeah, I know Krish Mohip, the Youngstown superintendent, came out of Chicago schools. I mean, there is a universe, I gather, of identified sort of school turnaround experts that are always out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring in a firm that has some knowledge of, here's a list of people that are known for being state turnaround experts. But, I mean, it has not always gone well. And the sense that this person is an outsider coming in to tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Krish, like I said, is from Chicago, was a superintendent there, and has just there are parents who appreciate the things he'd done, but the school board, the teachers union, a lot of others see him as this outsider that's been brought in and given control. And so that's definitely part of the problem, is that lack of buy-in in the local community, especially when you bring in somebody from outside the community to run the school district.
House Bill 70, that was the one that was passed in 2015 to create this new law. It was passed very quickly with little opposition. It was signed into law by then-Governor John Kasich. What spurred the fast pace, and why is it called the Youngstown Plan?
Yeah, it was fast. It went through one day of hearings.
Right.
It was exceedingly fast. It was actually an amendment to another bill. The original bill was supposed to improve and increase wraparound services, a lot more services for urban districts to provide social, emotional support for kids and stuff like that. And it was widely applauded by districts, urban districts and their school boards and unions. And then this was an amendment that sort of placed on there, pushed through really fast, because there's just this sense in Youngstown that there'd been sort of wheels spinning and no real improvement for years and years and years. One interesting caveat in the legislation gives this superintendent, this administrator that's brought in, CEO, that's the word I'm looking for, the ability to turn public schools into charter schools and essentially charter out the entire district. So there's this theory out there that this was a test to see if they could essentially charter out an entire district. Now, Krish Mohip has said that he does not intend to do that, but that's, if you talk to the school board or the teachers' unions, their biggest fear is that this thing was a test to see if they could take a public school district and turn all the schools into charter schools. That hasn't happened, but that has been the theory that some had put out there. Why it was put through so fast, I mean, they wanted it done, right? And Kasich had said consistently that he would veto any bill that would undo House Bill 70. Of course, he's no longer in power, so the fate of the bill is definitely up in the air.
Yeah, Governor Mike DeWine has said that he's open to reviewing House Bill 70. What's your sense about what that means? Is there some kind of do you think there's a strong feeling about it?
Actually, I asked him that personally during the campaign. He was here at the Dayton Daily News, and I asked, what are your thoughts on the takeover bill, and would you stick to it or make changes to it? And he said that he knows that it has problems. He's been to Lorain. He's been to Youngstown. He's talked to the school boards there and is amenable. He talked about some sort of third way. So the state needs to have some mechanism of accountability, right? So what that accountability looks like is it's open to question. So he talked about something that's less than a total takeover, but still has a stick. There still has to be, the sense is, some sort of component to, there's consequences if you fail local school district. And so exactly what that's going to look like is up in the air. There's legislation that's been put forward to prevent any more districts from going under state takeover. That's been proposed. There are some legislation out there that's that would replace it. There's a bunch of discussion going on. The chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee is one of our local senators, Peggy Lehner, and she's talked about there's a lot of discussion that's going to go into this. It seems highly likely that some amendment will be made, but what that's going to be is up in the air. Because, I mean, on a long enough timeline, every urban school district in the state could end up under state control. And
right.
So I think that there's definitely will to do something about it before that happens.
Tell me, where is State Superintendent of Education Paula DeMaria stand on this? Do you know?
He's come out strongly critical of it. I mean, he was in a recent school board meeting has said that it creates acrimony. I think the sheer effort required to overcome the acrimony and dissension that's been created by House Bill 70 has created the conditions where even the best-intentioned individuals are challenged to try to make progress. That's something he told the state school board at a recent meeting, that even if parts of it work, the unintended consequences in Youngstown and Lorain, the school board suing the CEO, the union suing the CEO. I mean, there's just all these issues into the gears that are slowing everything down, that even if it's making progress, there's all these things that are distracting from that progress.
What is it costing the state to run these school districts? How does that work? Is there a cost accrued, I guess?
No. In fact, that's one of the criticisms, is the state really doesn't put a whole lot of money into it. They put in, I forget the dollar amount, $200,000 to help them hire the CEO and hire a treasurer, I think. But there's not a whole lot of money put in. And that's been one of the criticisms, is these districts saying, look, if we're having problems, we don't need you to tell us what to do. We need your help. We need you to come in and give us resources to turn these things around. Because it does not come with – it doesn't cost the state much, but also the district would argue they're not getting any real help. They're just getting somebody else to come in. I know I talked to the superintendent of Springfield Schools a couple weeks ago about this, and he mentioned, look, if the state knows how to fix it, just tell us, and we'll do it ourselves. It does not come with a whole lot of additional state funding.
What about those wraparound services? You said that House Bill 70 was originally put forth to expand wraparound services for these low-performing, mostly urban districts.
Yeah, so if you look at low-performing urban districts, there's a lot of similarities across the board. And when a superintendent takes a hard look at turning around the performance of the district, there's several things that consistently they go to. There's research has shown that it works. Krish Mohib is doing this in Youngstown. Elizabeth Lally is doing this in Dayton, in Lawrence, Massachusetts, where there was a big turnaround. These are some of the things they did. And it involves a longer school day, having after-school services for the students. It involves summer school, so essentially getting kids in class more, and it involves addressing some of the issues that they face outside the school day, so socio-emotional wraparound services. There's things called neighborhood school centers in a lot of districts. In Cincinnati, the Euler School has a health clinic as part of the school district. So we have several of them here where the school, not only is there after-school care, but the kids can get social services attention. They can get mental health services. There's a lot of English language learners. They used to call it ESL.
English is a second language, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now it's called English language learners. All those non-academic, non-core academic things to address the other challenges the kids are having, those wraparound services are something that all school districts, especially these mental health aspect, would love to get more of.
Now, you mentioned that one of the powers that the CEOs have is to charter out the whole district if they wanted to. None of the districts that are under state control have been chartered out. But that explains to me why some charter proponents out there are complaining that they weren't invited on the program today. Are charter proponents still supportive of House Bill 70?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the ability to take, I mean, so it gives the district the ability, the CEO the ability to charter out schools. It doesn't really change much the opportunities. I mean, I think that charter schools have the ability now to go into these districts, open up, and operate independently. It's a good question, because a lot of districts do not get along with the charter schools in their service area. Mm-hmm. It is very competitive. There's a lot of bad blood. And there are a few examples of, and again, Lawrence, Massachusetts, one of the things that the superintendent there did was actually the lowest performing public school. He went to a charter operator and said, look, you guys are running a good school. We want you to run our school. And so he actually partnered with some of the charter schools to improve. That there's some arguments that if charter schools and public schools could work together better, then that might benefit the whole area. But yeah, at this point, then, no, there's not a whole lot of niceties between a lot of the public schools and the charter schools. I don't know where the charter schools stand on House Bill 70 specifically, though.
Okay. Well, Josh Schweiger, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Josh Swigert, Dayton Daily News investigative reporter. He's been covering the issue of school takeovers by the state. There's a state law out there. It's been it was enacted in 2015 that empowers the state to take over a district when they fail the state report card, when they achieve an F on a state report card for three consecutive periods. Columbus is coming up, teeing up right now is Dayton City Schools. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to hear from two lawmakers who are co-sponsoring legislation to change the state's approach to takeovers. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus City Schools could be under state control in under 2 years. That's due to a 2015 law that applies to any Ohio district that receives three consecutive failing grades on the state report card. Dayton schools could be taken over as soon as this summer, with Columbus and other districts facing potential takeovers after the next school year. We're talking about how the process has worked in other districts and what the prospects are for Columbus today. A bipartisan pair of Ohio House members, Euclid Democrat Kent Smith and Brunswick Republican Steve Hambly, introduced a bill last week that would stop state takeovers of struggling school districts. Representative Kent Smith joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Very happy to be with you all, Ann. Thank you very much.
Also with us is Representative Steve Hambly. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
State Representative Joe Miller of Amherst has called the current law a disaster. He said that after 3 years, we haven't seen any evidence that state takeovers improve academic achievement. And I'm wondering, in the process of putting your bill together, what you think about what kind of metrics would you use anyways? How would you measure success when it comes to a takeover, Representative Hambly?
Yes. Well, our bill is very simple. It discontinues the state takeovers because it has failed. I think that the metrics we're talking about are going to take some time and effort before we actually, if you've got leaky plumbing, you shut off the water before you start fixing the plumbing.
And so does that apply to the districts that are under control of the state now?
Oh, exactly. Well, ours, does not apply to them. I think that's going to take more time and consideration. Each of them come from a different history and in place. Lorain had an ADC dating back to 2013. Only after House Bill 70 was passed in 2015 did they come under this new regime. Over the period of the last number of years, the legislature has changed, if you will, the powers and authorities and made it much more authoritarian, with the CEO and obviously having much more expansive powers, and also disempowered the local officials.
Representative Smith, every city is different, every city school district's different, but by and large, we're talking about the big city school districts that are coming under this process, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's three districts that have been taken over as of right now, Youngstown, Lorain, and East Cleveland. But it is, I think, three of the next five largest cities are teetering on that list, that being Columbus, Toledo, Dayton. It could be if we could go from, I think our calculations were that currently there's 13, almost 14,000 public school students. But if these other 10 were to be taken over, that number would go from 14,000 almost up to 130,000 public school kids in Ohio.
And Representative Hambly, another thing they have in common is they're all low wealth districts. I mean, there's a low wealth thing in all of this, right?
Oh, there's no doubt. I think when you study nationwide, the studies have been done conclusively. They end up being urban centers, largely with minority and poor people. And so, if anything, this seems to be directed, and as a consequence, you end up disempowering the people that are needed to actually improve their districts.
You were a co-sponsor of House Bill 70 in 2015. Share, what are your recollections about why that moved so fast and why there was so little debate about it?
Well, early on, House Bill 70 wasn't what it ended up being.
Right.
At the very last amendments that were made were largely brought upon by the State Superintendent Ross and, of course, the Kasich administration, convincing many of us that the wraparound services and everything, all the good reforms that many Democrats had supported, as well as myself, mm-hmm. that this needed to be included to address the issues with Youngstown. We were largely convinced, I think misled, as to the involvement of the local community in making those kind of decisions. I've done my penance, I guess, and recognize that certainly I made a mistake, and I've acknowledged that publicly several times. Mm-hmm. And if anything, this is an effort to kind of redress that mistake and move forward, hopefully with something that involves a much more process involves the public and due consideration of all the issues.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking to the two co-sponsors of House Bill 27. It was recently introduced, and it would discontinue future state takeovers of districts that meet the qualifications for another bill passed in 2015 that applies to any Ohio district that receives three consecutive failing grades on the state report card. Columbus is coming up on that score. Dayton, it is imminent. And the three school districts that are currently covered by it, Youngstown, Lorain, and East Cleveland. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests right now are the authors of House Bill 127, Kent Smith. He's a Democrat representative from Euclid, and also Republican Steve Hambly of Brunswick. It doesn't apply to current takeovers. I can't remember which one of you, Representative Smith or Hambly, I guess Representative Smith, why wouldn't it apply to the ones that are currently taken over?
Well, I mean, I think Representative Hambly had his illustration about if the plumbing's leaking, the first thing you do is turn off
right.
the water. I mean, there's 611 public school districts in the state of Ohio. Currently, three of them have been taken over. Another 10 could fall into state takeover status. So, again, we in the three districts that have been taken over, we have not seen that this model has led to better student outcomes. It has largely created chaos inside the three districts that have been taken over. So we're interested in making sure that the next 608 districts don't get swallowed up by this.
Hmm.
I think the exit plan for these three districts is going to be unique to these three districts. I think Representative Hambly and I are not interested. I mean, in the chaos that was created by the state takeover, we're not interested in creating more chaos with whatever plan we, the Columbus knows best model doesn't seem to be working. And that being said, I think we are awaiting the report from the Ohio Department of Education mm-hmm. as to whether or not these state takeovers are working. My guess is their report is going to say it's not. And perhaps from that, we will, then draft new legislation as to how to ease these three out. And I think the goal would be that by the beginning of this next school year, that districts that were taken over are going to be restored to local control, and the other 608 won't have this hanging over their head.
Okay, well, that's a pretty quick timeline. Yeah, Representative Hambly?
I would suggest good legislation takes time.
Mm-hmm.
The due process, careful consideration, as well as input from all the interested stakeholders. And those are all, of course, characteristics that were missing in the final version of House Bill 70. And we're not seeking to repeat that. I think we're going to take a very studied approach, one that's going to address this. And as Representative Smith has indicated, we don't want to recreate that chaos. We've got three good case studies on how not to do a state takeover. And at this point, we don't need any more victims. We first need to stop that. And then we, of course, need to address with the issues of what resources are needed for the community. And we know that there's other efforts coming in. There's legislation probably this week involving repeal and replace. Mm-hmm. And I'm co-sponsoring that and supporting that.
Okay.
But that's going to take a lot more time than getting everything completed by July 1. Right now, we've got a huge budget that's coming through.
Mm-hmm.
We're all engaged in all this legislation. And the last thing we need to do is rush to judgment what the replacement ought to look like. And indeed, we have the rest of the General Assembly. So long as we're not creating any more victims, we have a report card that is largely, as it says, not believed. It's very misleading. We have excessive testing. We have to deal with all those issues, as well as the state funding of education that are all part of this mix. And I think those are the things that we have to concentrate on over the next year and a half that we have in place in this General Assembly. But in the meantime, first thing we need to do is make sure there's no more victims.
The one of the pieces of House Bill 70 was that CEOs would have the option of chartering out schools, of hiring a charter operation to run the districts. In none of the cities where there's current state takeover has that occurred. I was wondering if you have any insights into why that is, or what that piece and the role of charters in all of this is. Representative Smith?
No. I mean, the districts have all entered state takeover in with different levels of community support or mm-hmm. lack of support.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, one of the things that is, I would say, problematic is that the CEO has got pretty much complete authority. And so they could do that kind of thing. They've got complete operational, managerial, and instructional control, and that has manifested itself differently in the three districts. East Cleveland just hired the CEO in the last month or so. So not a great deal of changes have been made in East Cleveland. In Lorain, it's, I think, pretty much been chaos since day one. In Youngstown, at least initially, while the Youngstown plan doesn't seem to be working,
mm-hmm.
The Vindicator wrote a story about that just on Friday, that test scores overall seem to be going down in Youngstown. But as Representative Hanley said, and I think what I've said is, the exit strategy for these three districts is going to be different. But no, to this point, it doesn't seem like charter schools have been instituted by the CEOs in either of those districts, even though they've got total control.
Yeah. Representative Hambly, any thoughts about that?
No, I would totally agree with Representative Smith on this. That is not seen as a solution. I mean, frankly, since you do have a CEO in charge, basically authoritarian, and it basically every year that you're in under an ADC, you continue to grow and grow under that authority. I don't see that as a likely scenario for those three communities. They still have the ability to, as individuals, to opt out and, of course, attend those through various scholarship programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would the public system really actually see that as an alternative for the reform? Because what we're really talking about is not only reform of education, we're talking about the improvements needed within the community. A struggling education system is just a symptom of a struggling community. And until the state really looks at holistically providing, I mean, wraparound services are great, but if you have the underlying structure of the community itself is impoverished, the inability of the families to dysfunctional and so forth, and lack of resources, until you address that holistically, you're really not going to have much of a positive result when it comes to the public education system.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yes, hi. Well, I guess the gentleman just answered one of my questions, but my issue is poverty. I think the poverty is the cause and not necessarily the administration of the schools. It doesn't matter who's running them. They're going to face this community poverty problem. But I was also wondering if there's been a correlation study done between the use of cell phones that students are allowed to use in school and the declining academic standards, because I've noticed in school, I substitute teach every now and then, and I've noticed that kids are allowed to use cell phones in school, and predominantly they don't pay much attention to the lesson going on. they're on their phones.
Yeah.
And Columbus, for example, has a rule. The Columbus Board of Education has a strict rule that there are no cell phones are allowed in class, but it's violated all over the place. Mm. So,
well, you know, any thoughts about that, Representative Smith?
I think Mark's first point is, you know, about the level of poverty is dead on. I mean, the average median household income in the state of Ohio is above $69,000. And if you look at the median household income of the three districts that have been taken over, East Cleveland's at just under $20,000. Lorraine is at about $34,000. And Youngstown is at 24. And so, again, if this was really – if House Bill 70 was really about replacing failed governance and improper leadership, you would have thought that it would yield some – you know, you'd have districts on either side of the median household income. But quite frankly, you know, the three districts that have been taken over are about half the median income at the highest, and all the 10 that are teetering, all of them are below the state average also. And if I could just add one other thing, I mean, it's not just about academic achievement and community support. This is also about democracy and the grand American experiment. You know, in America, the right to vote is a fundamental freedom. We're the leading democracy in the world, and our election system ought to be free, fair, and accessible. And, you know, we in the General Assembly who serve 11.5 million Ohioans should be about the cause of advancing the integrity of our elections, not preventing citizens from voting. And, I mean, so one of the most disturbing elements is in these three communities that have been taken over, Lorain, Youngstown, and East Cleveland, those local voters have no say currently in how their district's being run. And I think that's one of the real problematic components to this.
What about the idea that in Dayton Daily Schools, for example, 15 buildings are making good progress for, you know, and that's not unusual in any urban district. There's some buildings that are doing fine. When you're looking at all of this, Representative Hambly, are you looking to maybe break things down into little smaller chunks instead of taking over entire districts and tarnishing the entire district?
Oh, no, absolutely. I think that if anything demonstrates the Ohio approach is one of inflexibility. I mean, East Cleveland is an example where they were actually improving, and what happened by going into and creating the turmoil and being taken over as it did, that it basically it was counterproductive because they were making improvements. But what new school teacher would want to go into a district that's being threatened to be taken over? What person, an individual, wanted to stay on, maybe even towards the end of the close to their retirement, say, maybe it's time to leave early before all this stuff happens. Mm-hmm. So likely it actually undermines the advancements. And you can see that in Dayton public schools. That's why I think the purpose of this bill is to make sure that that uncertainty and that turmoil is eliminated. And then when you really do need to approach it, you are talking about at a school level, at an individual building level, and providing the technical assistance and the resources necessary to address the issue rather than going system-wide. We have this formulaic approach that basically undermines the whole, Smith is talking about, the democratic foundation of our education system. We still have a constitution that requires the local community to be able to vote and elect a board of education. And this actually, House Bill 70 process undermines that. And even though it recognizes that requirement, it undermines any kind of connection between what is actually going on in the school and the people that have a democratic voice.
Isn't that the case with a lot of different issues out there, though, that where local control is being eroded by the state, by the Ohio General Assembly, not just when it comes to schools, but when it comes to gun laws, when it comes to fracking rights and drilling rights in city property or in city within the city limits, I should say. What about those kinds of things, Representative Hambly?
Well, there's no doubt that that has been a tendency. There is that tension ever since we adopted home rule back in 1912 with the Constitution, and that going back and forth as to what constitutes a uniform law for the benefit of the entire state and what local home rule means. And obviously the courts fit into that depending, of course, upon the issue and back and forth. But it is part of that, certainly that tension between that dialogue. But ultimately, there is, in our Constitution, there is a connection that the people have to those institutions that are closest to their family, which is education. And I think that that's something that the state certainly still has an obligation, but it's one is what level do we come in and knowingly help and assist the community in dealing with a much more comprehensive problem than just the education.
Representative Steve Hambly, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Representative Hambly, he's an Ohio House Republican from Brunswick. And Representative Kent Smith, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time.
Glad to be here.
Ken Smith is a Democrat representing Euclid, and together they are co-sponsors of House Bill 127, which would discontinue the process put forth in 2015 in House Bill 70 that puts school districts under state control when they have failing grades for three consecutive failing grades on the state report cards. We're going to continue our conversation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A state takeover of Columbus City schools and other districts could be imminent due to a 2015 law that applies to any Ohio district that receives three consecutive failing grades on the state report card. Columbus would join Lorain, East Cleveland, and Youngstown school districts, which are already under state control. Today, we're talking about how the process has worked in other districts and what the prospects are for Columbus. Joining us now is Executive Director of the Ohio Coalition for Equity and Adequacy of School Funding, William Phyllis. He is a member of the Public Education Partners. That's a group working to end state takeovers of school districts. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Well, thank you, Ann.
Why do you oppose the state jumping in when a school district repeatedly fails in this way?
Well, I was a member of this Ohio Department of Education years ago as Assistant Superintendent of Public Instruction, and it was my observation at that time that the state could mess up a one-car parade. State control is anti-democratic. School districts are set up with local communities operating the schools through their boards of education, elected boards of education. And so the state really has no business operating a school. Now, periodically the state looks at the school district and says, well, that school district is failing. But the state fails to identify why the district is failing. Governance is not the issue. Poverty is the issue. And the state has never really addressed the poverty issue when it comes to the education of children.
Which is kind of the genesis of your organization, the Coalition for Equity and Adequacy of School Funding. The governor did not include any efforts, it looks like, in his proposed state budget to address the school funding issue. So that's not going to change.
Well, the current governor's budget did, in fact, address a part of the school funding issue, and that is that he is interested in providing wraparound services for the young people. And of course, that'll go a long ways in terms of solving the school funding problem. But obviously, the problem with school funding has always been the lack of state resources. The overdependence on property taxes has been the issue. Back as far as 1935, when the Foundation program was first established, the state provided 50% of the revenue. Now, that wasn't enough at the time. But right now, the state is providing less than 50% of the revenue for the operation of schools. Until the state makes a dramatic increase in the percentage of the total revenue provided to schools, we are going to have a problem with equity. We're going to have a problem with adequacy, particularly in the low income in the low wealth school districts across the state.
Let's see. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Your speaker took my
question,
but I agree with him that property taxes are the wrong way to go. Also, I think charter schools are the wrong way to go. I think we need to invest in education and not make it a profit motivation. It should be education is valuable. Ohio has historically had a lot of colleges, well-educated people, and to just abandon that, it makes no sense. I think the state needs to go back to funding and needs to go back to funding colleges also to reduce the costs. This is a state failure, I think. And I think the issue should be brought forth to the voters.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate your time. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Columbus City Schools were unable to participate in the conversation today, but we did get a response from the district regarding this issue. They wrote, "There's far more to measuring a child's learning and growth than what's scored on the state's annual local report card, which offers only a limited snapshot on six state selected indicators and a new overall district grade. We know the best decisions in a child's education are always made at the local level by families, teachers, staff, administrators, stakeholders in our neighborhoods, businesses and community, and by locally elected school boards," which echoes what you were saying and which the two state representatives were saying earlier in the program. But so does this start with what metrics we use in the first place to measure the success of districts? Bill Phyllis?
Well, I think the caller was right that and the legislators are right in that there's more to education than a test score. A kid is more valuable than a test score. Actually, what we need to do in this state is to go back to a full court press on support of public education. Back in 1983, when the Reagan administration issued the Nation at Risk report, that was the turning point in focusing attention on education. Since that time, there's been a lot of anti-public education rhetoric, and that rhetoric then has spurned the growth of privatization programs such as charters and vouchers. The state really needs to start investing wholeheartedly in the public system rather than farming out the public system. So this House Bill 70 is just part of the privatization movement. It's a part of the movement to take education away from the elected Board of Education and thus away from the community. And that is totally wrongheaded.
Joining us now is Henry Pettigrew. He is the CEO of East Cleveland Schools by way of House Bill 70 from 2015. Welcome to the show, Henry Pettigrew.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're talking about all of this today because there's a general agreement that the idea of the state taking over a local school district to improve to improve the district and help it achieve isn't really working in Ohio. From where you sit in East Cleveland running those schools, what are your thoughts?
I believe that that is, House Bill 70 is a big concept, state takeover. Those are large ideas. In our local context in East Cleveland, I've been here for about 30 days, And I've been doing a listening tour, going around talking to my constituents. I've gone to nursing homes. I've gone to City Hall. I've spoken at City Council, at parent meetings. I've spoken to my students, my staff, my administrators about what this means. Yeah, it's a big thing that happens in a school district, and you don't want it to happen. But now that it has happened in East Cleveland, my role is to repair, to make it more efficient, and to help with the systems. When I came into this district, I noticed there were a number of things that highly effective school districts, even in Ohio, are doing that are not present in this school district. So some of the opportunities that are because of this process would be to help us make ourselves more modern, efficient, more efficient. I'm losing kids because of enrollment for every kid that comes into our district, two more leave out. So these are some patterns that I have to disrupt, and I don't believe they would have disrupted unless this process took place. So it is a blessing for the folks in East Cleveland and myself. This is my district. I believe that I want to be an effective administrator here, and my goal is simple, is to rectify the problems, get us good performance on our student outcomes, and then return this district back to the local controlled school board. I do believe in public education. I do believe in the local, locally elected school board. My role is to solve problems, disrupt some processes that have been negatively impacting our children, and then return it back to the local school board so they continue to work.
Why do you think, I mean, what's your understanding about why this process has not succeeded in Youngstown and in Lorain?
My reasoning is, as I saw those implementations, I chose to do an implementation that was slightly different. I'm coming into East Cleveland. I'm trying to be a unifier. There are some great people in this district. The processes were just bad. So rather than me looking at the people or really trying to begin to push in initiatives, even from a national model or region or a state model, I'm going to organically create strategies. And we're doing that in our section. This is our second 30 days of this cycle. We're starting to action plan, strategize, but that's just not me doing it or a group of people coming from outside. I'm working with the people inside the school district and the community. I think it's a slightly different take on this approach. I want to be an effective administrator of this school district, whether you call it a CEO or a superintendent. They need someone at the helm that's the moral and intellectual leader, and that is what I'm trying to do here. So it may look a little different.
Critics of the process say that it takes control out of local hands, and that that's wrong. That if people are paying for it, and if you want to go to the voters and ask for levies and that kind of a thing, they ought to be locally controlled as well. And so far, it seems like number one, they're not succeeding in those other districts, and number two, it's not clear how they'll ever return power to the locals.
Okay. And I work with my local school board. We were at our school board meeting last night, and we got some good work done, and we showed the community that we can work together. It's not about taking power. My board and I are working collaboratively to try to understand how do we move forward. It's not an adversarial process. We speak regularly because they are integral to the process. So in my district in East Cleveland City Schools, it's not about taking power from people. It's about how do we work collectively to move forward, because that's what the public school needs.
And Bill Phyllis, what about that? I mean, it's a lot of people have said it's about poverty. It's not about who runs the district. It's about how you pay for it. So it sounds like, you know, Henry Pettigrew is trying a different approach.
Well, it seems that from listening to Mr. Pettigrew, it seems that he would be a successful administrator in any school district. The problem is that and throughout the country, when a school district is taken over by state decree, the administrator operates as a lone ranger, operates separate and apart of the Board of Education.
And he's saying he doesn't want to do that.
And his experience might be different in East Cleveland, but certainly as we look to Lorain and Youngstown, the scenario has been totally 180 degrees from that mm-hmm. perspective.
Okay. Well, I want to say thanks to Henry Pettigrew. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much. Glad to talk to you. Happy to do it.
Thank you. Henry Pettigrew, he's CEO of East Cleveland Schools, which were taken over by the state. He was appointed to run it. They call it a CEO. It's kind of the same thing as a superintendent. Also, I want to thank Bill Phyllis, Executive Director of the Ohio Coalition for Equity and Adequacy of School Funding, and a member of the Public Education Partners. That's a group that's working to end state takeovers of school districts. Bill Phyllis, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.